the role of a father in a kid's life is, I mean, it's so important. Mm. And so just recognizing the importance of spiritual leadership in the family, I think we've got to figure out better ways to do it, right?
My name is Tim Anderson. Welcome to Father and Friend, where men learn to live for the good of their families.
Today we're with Michael, and he's a father.
That is correct.
And how many boys do you have?
I have three boys.
Three boys. That's fantastic. And can you tell us their age ranges?
Yep. The oldest is 11. He's about to turn 12. The youngest is 8. Scratch that. The youngest is 7, about to turn 8. And then the middle one is currently 9. He's going to turn 10 in March.
Fantastic.
Ages are always fun, right?
They are. I forget mine too, so it's totally okay. Yeah. Awesome. So why don't you start by just telling us a little bit about what your family looks like on a daily basis.
Yeah, yeah. Our family, Sarah homeschools the kids. So that's maybe less unconventional these days. I feel like more and more moms are moving in that direction, especially since the pandemic. And having a little bit of a taste of that with school, doing the at-home thing. I think a lot of moms are moving in the direction of homeschooling, and that's a really cool thing to see. So she does that. That's a big dynamic because I also work from home full-time. So I'm at home all the time. The kids are at home all the time. We're just at home all the time. I don't see them all the time because I do try to keep things work-related in my workspace. Mm-hmm. So I do kind of keep a closed-door policy. And honestly, that's mostly because of the cats and not the boys, because they will come in as soon as the door opens.
That reminds me of in those old movies where you have the dad who sits at the desk in this dark candlelit room and the children have to come in and they knock on the door and they go, "Father, may we see you, please?"
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah.
Policy that strict?
It's not that strict, but it's the interesting thing is I do have a lot of meetings, so they do have to be careful in the sense that they could come in, mm-hmm. you know, when I'm on a meeting, and it's not really that scary because, you know, my desk is facing the door, so if they come in, usually I'm not talking. I can just kind of let them know, like, I'm in a meeting. Mm-hmm. I can even, you know, turn camera off and just say, "Hey, now's not a good time, but mm-hmm. come back in a minute." So yeah, it works really well. They kind of come in whenever they need to. They don't come in that often. Sarah does sometimes, but it's just that's kind of the dynamic of it. But I come out for lunch. We get to see each other for lunch every day, which a lot of people who work, you know, in an office, maybe not a lot, but when I used to work in an office, I could drive home and have lunch, and I did on a daily basis. So it's not that different, but it's different in the sense that sometimes I come out and just say, "Hey, how are things going?" And that's kind of nice to see. But for the most part, it's still kind of a 8-to-5 work day, and I see them at lunch, and that's about it. Just when they come in. After I get off, one thing that we try to do that my family, I don't know if I should be getting into this yet.
You can. So you're going to talk about some things that your family does that you think are fantastic.
Fantastic? I mean, they should be more common, right?
Or that you think should be standard.
Should be standard.
Every family
right,
should do that.
Right. Yeah. So growing up, my family would have all meals completely isolated. Mm. So I would eat every meal I had, except for breakfast. I'd have cereal in the kitchen. But every other meal, I guess lunch was mostly at school, but every other meal, dinner, would be in my bedroom. And often for me as a kid, that was either playing a video game or watching a TV show, just eating my meal, you know, no parents, no siblings, just me in my bedroom eating whatever I had for dinner.
Mm. Did you usually go downstairs to get it and then go back upstairs?
We didn't have stairs. We were in a ranch.
Oh, okay. So you'd go to the kitchen. Or was it on the table?
I think a lot of times my mom would bring it to me in my bedroom.
Oh, wow.
So it was a very just like...
It's like serious service.
Encourage you to stay in your bedroom and, you know, cater to that sort of dynamic. And so we definitely try not to do that. We try to make sure that all of our meals, when possible, are eaten at the table together. And so that's an important thing for us. And I think it's true in a lot of other areas, too. Sarah's a big proponent of kind of doing things as a team. So you've got the concepts of lots of kids in sports, and you got to get, you know, so-and-so to soccer practice and so-and-so to flag football practice and doing all these things at once. And we try not to have kids in, or multiple kids in sports at the same time, because we don't want to do that. We want to have the whole family at Isaac's soccer practice. Mm-hmm. Everybody be there for him and support him and be there as a family. Same thing for anybody else who's going to be in a sport. So if we do any type of activity, we want, when possible, the whole family to be there. So that's kind of a dynamic we want to have kind of across the board. We don't want to just leave everybody kind of to their own devices. In some ways,
So you feel like the meal, it fits into that category of we're doing it together.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The team idea.
I think doing family together, right? Mm-hmm. Being together. The discussions are a little chaotic at this stage, but that's something you expect, you know. The kiddos can get into some pretty goofy conversations, but that's part of the dynamic of learning to deal with, you know, every stage of life. And we haven't really experienced any teenage years yet, so mm-hmm. we're getting into that. But it's a fun mix. It's, you know, it can be frustrating. It can be fun. It can be a whole mix of in between. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
So team, this idea of team, do you feel like in your family growing up, there was a idea of team, or?
I would say no. I had one brother, and he was he's still alive. He's 5.5 years older than me. So we didn't really do much together. Too much of a distance. Yeah. He kind of did his own thing. You know, even when we were getting to the age where we were even remotely close to the same maturity, which, you know, when even is that, he could drive and he was always out of the house. And so I was mostly at home by myself. So kind of an only child experience. I mean, he was there, but we didn't interact a lot. So not a lot of interaction between my brother and I. We just had our own activities. We handled them differently. My dad had his own cabinet shop. And, you know, he did work whenever he needed to. And he didn't, I don't know, it's kind of hard to define, you know, kind of how he approached fatherhood. But I think, you know, he had a vision of raising us that was, I guess, overly cautious. I think he tried more with my brother. He tried things. And I think they just butted heads a lot. And so I think he stepped back a bit and said, I don't really want to mess up with Michael. So I'm just going to keep out of the picture a little bit. So I think he was overly cautious. And in that sense, basically just stepped out of the picture. I mean, he was present, but not.
By cautious, you mean hands off?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Very. I mean, he would do things. He would take us camping every once in a while. But, you know, I don't have a ton of memories of us doing things together. Most of my interactions or doing anything was with my mom. And he was pretty, I mean, I guess you would call it a social anxiety he had, that he didn't really want to show up to public spaces a lot. So there were very few instances where I was doing something like a sport or a, you know, performance. I did some one-act play in high school. He didn't really show up to those things. You know, mainly to kind of avoid being in public. He wasn't really fond of that. So he wasn't really present. And I'd say, you know, my mom's involvement, she did a lot. You know, she really...
She participated. She dug in.
Yeah, she did a lot. And so from a perspective of saying it was a team effort, I'd say no. No, it wasn't really. And so there's a lot to learn from that, you know. I'd say, you know, they worked with the tools that they had. They didn't really have... you know, a lot of coaching, and they didn't really, you know, I mean, I think that they grew up with, what do you call it, the benevolent neglect, is that right? the approach to parenting where it's leave the house, be back by dinner time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of how my dad grew up. My mom was an only child, and she grew up on a farm, mm-hmm. so she probably had a little bit more of a close relationship with her parents, but
because they worked together, or she contributed to the farm
life. She contributed, yeah. So they all kind of, the whole family worked together. They did a lot of work together. So in that way, she probably had some of a good model, but I think it was probably broken a lot by, you know, my dad's experience and sort of his expectations coming into the marriage, because it was probably very different than what she expected. And so, yeah, you work with what you have, and sometimes you don't ever get the bonk on the head to say, hey, this isn't the right path. Yeah. You got to do it a little bit different.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Our goal is to try to be engaged with the kids, try to be a team, have the family together, and, you know, have an openness there, have them be able to come to us and come to each other. So
benevolent parenting, that would be one of the things that you grew up with, but you would leave behind and not continue in your family.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So do you see that as benevolent parenting and team approach to family? Do you see those as the two, maybe not quite opposites, but kind of the response to benevolent parenting being, we're going to do this as a team?
Yeah, I would say it's a bit of a response. It's not simply a response to that. It's more... Sorry,
benevolent neglect is what you said.
Yeah.
But the idea that we're hands off and good luck.
Benign neglect, is that right? Anyways, one of those two.
We should look it up.
This yeah, way. Yeah, correct it. And then I can say all that stuff over it.
But the idea that hands off parenting.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to let you figure out life.
Yeah, figure out life.
And good luck. Go stumble
through some, you know, problem solving things. Mm-hmm. Go experience, you know, making money, buying a soda at the convenience store, you know.
Don't spend it all in one shot.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So you would say the team, you looking at your family, and would you say that's you, or would you say that's your wife, or both, and that together you've said, we want to do this together, not like that?
Right. We both brought ideas to the table that have contributed to the idea of sort of cooperating in that team sort of environment. I think there have been some times where one of us has agreed or disagreed, you know, in different ways. You know, if you talk about sports, that was probably one area where initially I may have disagreed and said, I like the idea of them kind of having some independence in that regard. And we talked through it, and like, you know what, it's not that big of a hill. And I think that it makes a lot of sense for us to support each other. And so, yeah, just, I think both of us had areas where we thought it's really good to be a team here. Mm-hmm. We didn't really use the word team probably at the time, but, you know, just it's good for us all to be involved in this way. And it started to click, like, it makes sense as a family that we do view each other as a team and that we work together and support each other. So
that's great. What would be another thing that you grew up with that either you've chosen to hold on to or you've chosen to let go of?
Yeah, I think based on what I've told you, there's not a lot that I would say we've held on to.
I suppose if you're hands off, then there's not a lot.
Right.
There's just not anything there as far as practices or rituals or routines.
There wasn't a ton of structure. There wasn't much discipline. I kind of was left to do what I wanted. There just wasn't much structure. I'd say from a spiritual standpoint, my dad grew up Catholic and my mom grew up in a Baptist church. And so she had a propensity to take us to church early on. And I think she kind of got wore down after a while because my dad wouldn't go to church. It's not necessarily like a Catholic mentality, right? Like it's just, there's some people who were raised Catholic and maybe were a little jaded by that. Mm-hmm. And it's not that they leave the idea of the church, but just maybe the idea of the church is not appetizing. I think that's kind of the category that my dad fell into. And so he just didn't go. And I think after a while, my mom found it a pain to drag us to church by herself. And she kind of stopped too. And so we didn't really have a religious structure, you know, as far as parents encouraging us to do church, do, you know, youth groups or things like that. I think what really helped with that and what kind of turned that around was I had some friends in late elementary school, junior high. I mean, they continue to be my friends, you know, even to today. And one of them was a preacher's kid. And so wound up going to church with them and getting plugged into the youth group. And the parents got along really well with my mom. So she started going to that church with me because she had to take me there for youth group anyways. Mm-hmm. And she started getting plugged in. And at that point, she sort of morphed back into a supportive spiritual role, you know, in my life.
I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humor. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
So it's kind of a weird amoebus. Like, early on we went to church, then we didn't, and then we started going to church again. So there was a little bit of that. But I think the role of a father in a kid's life is, I mean, it's so important. And so just recognizing the importance of spiritual leadership in the family, I think we've got to figure out better ways to do it, right? So just looking back at that model, I think, yes, I would keep, you know, the idea of what later became regularly attending, at least my mom and me, church together, but doing it in a way where the whole family's involved, going back to that team tenet and being able to encourage each other spiritually and put practices in place where we're actually talking about things. And I think that's something we're continuing to work on. I think there's some things that I feel like we do okay, and there's some things that we need to improve on, and we're continually working on trying to be better at that. So I think that's a big one.
So your dad did not attend church with you and your mom. You went to church with your mom by just you and her, and you would have liked your dad to have participated in that, or to have
absolutely, yeah,
led the way in that. Is that too strong? Or
no, absolutely. I think that's super important.
Mm-hmm. So what have you done differently then in your family now that is a response to that?
As a response to that,
mm-hmm.
Again, I don't. I guess it is a response to that, but also not. I mean, it's more a cultivation of being involved in, you know, in college I was involved in Campus Crusade. There's discipleship programs there where you continually, you know, you're learning about becoming more like Christ and being involved in churches. And you get a strong urgency to be involved in the family of God. And I don't think that's necessarily a response to my dad not being involved in taking us to church. But I think that idea of me being a spiritual leader in that way has become important through that cultivation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so not that you were somehow sort of rejecting what your dad had done, but maybe you saw the good in doing something versus doing
I do look back and say, I wish that you would have done this. You know. But it's not, I wouldn't call it a response. I'd say it's something that came more out of that, you know, that sanctification.
Discipled in a good way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah. That's good. So what are some things, what are two other things, if you have to, doesn't have to be two, it could be one.
Right.
That you did growing up that you will not continue? Is there anything else besides the not attending church regularly and the hands-off parenting?
Sure. Actually, I want to jump back to the something that I kept.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's supposed to be first, right?
Yeah. So what did you keep that you did grow up?
Yeah, I don't know if I've even said anything I've kept.
No, you haven't.
So this actually kind of comes from the hands-off parenting, right? We grew up in the country. My parents had 5 acres. And we just kind of could run off in the woods. And we could play outside, you know, to our heart's content. And we did a lot of times, you know, spend a lot of time outside. And kids would love to come over.
And you never got into trouble?
Not really. I mean, we probably got into trouble.
No serious trouble.
Right. Yeah. Right. Nothing major.
Yeah.
And so I think Sarah and I both have a heart for seeing our kids outside as much as they can be. And so we looked for a place where we could have some land. And we have 2 acres. And we set it up in a way where we want it to be a fun place to be. We want it to be a place where kids want to come and kids want to hang out. And I feel like
my kids want to come out and hang out at your house. So there you go, it works.
Moving in that direction, right? So, and the kids love being outside. You know, they spend a lot of time outside. So
are you in the Roundhouse co-op?
No.
You're not in that co-op.
No.
Okay.
Sarah started off doing stuff with them, mm-hmm. but when they made it official, she didn't choose to be a part of that.
Gotcha. I guess there was a cost at that point.
There was a cost. Yeah, there was a cost. Yeah. So there were several factors, you know, going into considerations for that, and it wasn't something that was going to work for her. So she still takes them to the Roundhouse. Mm-hmm. They do pick up games, and we see them fairly often. And it's great to see them.
Because they're an outdoor bunch.
Yeah, they do a lot. We did a pig with them.
Did you?
So Parker bought some pigs, and we bought half of a pig. So they still raised it and did, you know, all the stuff. And we went in with
I think I might have met that pig.
Yeah, okay.
I may have met it. Yeah.
There you go. And so it was not pit roast. It was butchered. So we got different cuts of the pig.
So you got the meat and then you froze it. Or
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So we got cuts of bacon. It's so interesting to have the, you know, unsalted, processed, I guess you would call it,
mm-hmm.
version of bacon and realize, wow, this is so different than what I...
Better or worse?
I'm
assuming it's better, but...
Well...
Not as salty, maybe?
I mean, salty does make it taste better, right?
Yeah.
So if you take out bacon and you cook it, this is delicious, you know, mm-hmm. and if you take out natural bacon and cook it, your first reaction is, wow, this is not as good as store-bought bacon, you know, but that's because of all the stuff that's packed into it, right? Mm-hmm. But it kind of smacks you on the head, like, wow, we do, you know, pack a lot of stuff into our food. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
Like, now I know what fake bacon tastes like.
Right.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, maybe you have to add a lot of salt to it. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, yeah, we do stuff with the Roundhouse, yes.
So the outdoors, that's something you did have growing up that you would hold on to.
Yeah.
Is
something that was encouraged, something that we were surrounded with that
being outside.
We still want to have, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What kinds of things have you done to encourage that outside time, that outside activity, the desire to be outside?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we limit a lot of things. We don't do a lot of screen time.
How much screen time do you do on a weekly basis?
It varies. They have an allotment of video game time that's an hour a week, so they can play video games an hour a week. And mm-hmm. and if it's, you know, a movie or a TV show or something, it's just kind of depends on our discretion, because they don't really watch TV shows. We actually just implemented a thing this year, probably at the start of the summer, that's we watch a show as a family once a week.
Oh,
and
cool.
So we have a show we're watching together, and we'll watch episodes. And when we started, we did the Wingfeather Saga.
Mm-hmm.
And we finished that. And we may have started earlier, because we did the Wingfeather Saga. Then we did a season of probably the Mandalorian Star Wars show.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started watching this season of American Ninja Warrior. So we're not caught up with live, but we watch the episodes afterwards. So, yeah.
it's an hour a week of their choice, and then if you watch a show together as a family, that's sort of outside of that time.
Yeah, and movies could vary, you know, depends on the situation, but it's not very often. We do family nights on Fridays, and I'd say every 2 to 3 weeks is probably a movie for family nights. So, yeah, that's kind of our...
Do they ever have to do school on the computer, or is that not the thing yet?
Not yet. There are some things that they do with the computer, but I don't know if they're strictly school, because they do piano lessons, and I can't remember if that's a part of their curriculum or not.
They do piano lessons on the computer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So they have a video instructor, so he talks through it, and they do the stuff on the keyboard. So, yeah.
Neat. It's cool.
Yeah.
So you've implemented some restrictions at your house to encourage choosing something other than a screen.
Yep.
So, hey, you don't have the screen as an option, pick something else.
Right.
Does that always end up in them going outside, or does that end up with them doing other things, or what does their preference end up being in that circumstance?
I think early on, maybe not. I think it's become a habit, though.
To go outside?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
For a while, we encouraged them to go outside. There would be just times where we'd say, hey, go outside.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe they'd go outside with a groan. But they'd go outside and they'd find something to do and they'd enjoy it. And now I think they choose to go outside more than they choose to do anything else. So, yeah, it's great to see. I love seeing them go out and find something to, you know, dig into. And so yeah. I feel like it's worked out great for us. You know, you never really know, but yeah, it's worked out pretty good.
That's cool. So you experienced a lot of outdoor time growing up.
Mm-hmm.
You want to encourage that in your children. And so one way that you've done that is to limit screen time and also create a backyard that's inviting to want to go out and to live in a place. You've chosen a house and a location that would be encouraging for that, minus Texas, of course.
Sure.
But you've chosen a location within your where you live that would be encouraging for them to go outside. Are you also an outside person? Do you spend time outside?
Yeah. It is tricky in the sense that, you know, you work remotely on a computer. You come in, you help with dinner, you help clean up dinner, and then there's this short span of time between after dinner to getting kids into bed, and then it's dark. And so the idea of spending time outside, it's basically Saturdays. There are evenings where I try to go outside and make sure that we have some outside time with me and the boys, but I wish it could happen more often. So it's hard to fit it in.
It is.
But I would say instinctually, yeah, I'd love to be outside more. Yeah.
That's great. So you would keep from your childhood outside nature time. Was there other things that you'd keep from your childhood? Or was that the main one?
That's the main one. Okay. Yeah, that's probably predominantly the one. I'd say another one is having extended family close by. Most of my extended family live in the DFW area, so having them close by is cool, especially my parents, because we lived in Colorado for a while, and moving back after we had kids was huge, because having them available to come and watch kids and we do stuff, that's really, really nice.
So they helped out watching your kids. What about just their influence in your life, about you growing up, childhood? Do you remember the influence uncles? Was it uncles, aunts, grandparents?
Mainly, yeah, I mean, uncles, aunts, grandparents. My dad was one of six. My mom was an only child. But wow, that's her
big gap.
Her mom, oh man, I don't remember how many sisters she had, but she had so many siblings. My mom had a ton of aunts. And so there were a lot of kind of extended cousins, you know, instead of first cousins. And so the family felt really big. And, you know, most of the time, If parents needed a babysitter, it'd probably be a cousin who's older who comes over and watches us. But we found ourselves being the recipients of a lot of love from our aunts and uncles too. So, yeah, it was good. It was good to have that proximity.
Do you feel like that helped you a lot, especially in your younger marriage days when your kids were younger and couldn't take care of themselves?
Yeah.
Because you're almost at the point of them being able to survive without you at the house.
Oh yeah, they could do a lot of things. I'll have to send you, I've probably shown you a picture, but I'll send you a picture of Elijah. I can't remember how old he was, but he's cooking eggs at the stove.
Nice.
I remember telling him one time, Sarah was gone for something, and Elijah was pretty little, and I told him, I'm going to go take a shower. You can get something ready for breakfast, you know, thinking he would choose cereal or oatmeal or something. And I come out of the shower and he's cooking eggs on the stove. And he did a pretty good job, actually. I helped him finish it up a little bit. And I was kind of surprised. But I have a picture of him that I'll have to send you. So
that's really great.
Yeah.
That's fun. Very good. Okay, so you've named two things you would continue. Or two things you would continue and two things you would leave behind. Is there any other one of those categories that you would name or remember at this point?
I don't think so. I don't think I have anything specifically to add to that. Okay. I think it's important to comment more on kind of the spiritual side of things. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of being very intentional in discipling our kids as they grow up. And one thing that I realized, especially recently, you know, talking about the time spent outside on a daily basis and thinking about how the days fly by so fast for us and for the kids, remembering when I was a kid, even a day felt pretty long. You know, in school, a day and a year, they just felt like maybe a day didn't feel like an eternity, but it felt pretty long. And so you remembered almost all the little things that happened in your day. And if your dad didn't spend time with you, it was, you know, a notable thing of the day. So I think it's especially interesting now that I notice, and you've probably noticed this, you know, as your kids were growing up, there's a point where you share with them spiritual things or even, you know, just historical things or any type of academic thing. And they respond with kind of the glossed over, I don't know what you're talking about. And then they'll say some nonsense and, you know, like, turn the attention to something else. Like, look at this thing I made, you know, and you realize, oh, we're not.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save with customized coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
There yet. And I feel like there's so much parenting that's spent in that, oh, we're not there yet point. You kind of lull yourself to sleep. You kind of lull yourself into a, they're not ready for this yet. And then you get to the point where they are ready for this, and you realize this has to be very intentional because every day is larger for them. And for me, it just zips by, and I can forget, oh, I didn't even do a thing today. But that's massive. And forgetting to be intentional, forgetting to invest in one day can... I wouldn't say that that's catastrophic, but I would say making up for it is important. Making yourself available and trying to be intentional and recognizing that, yes, my days are faster, but I need to be able to squeeze in time to invest in them while they are receptive to, you know, hearing those things. So,
and you, you started this by saying the spiritual side of things.
Yeah.
When you say investing them, are you talking about discipling them? Are you talking about teaching them what manhood is about?
Yeah, absolutely. I think.
How do you go about doing
discipling,
that with your boys?
You know, filters into a lot of different categories, right? So, one thing that I'm not currently doing, but I'm about to start doing, is intentionally taking Isaac, because he's the oldest. We're going to start, and I wish I would have started this maybe when he was 10, but we're going to do a book together. And we picked up What is the Gospel? And we're going to start there, and we're going to read through that book, and you know, we've got kind of a guide to go through it and everything, and that's where we're going to start. And so I want to alternate that with kind of talks about, you know, preparing for, you know, he's getting very close to hormonal changes, you know, getting very close to the point where there's going to be some, you know, really awakened awarenesses in him. And so being able to talk through those things ahead of time, being able to prepare him and mainly prepare him to be able to talk openly with us about his experiences and recognize that we're available and that, you know, we've stumbled through a lot of things that he's stumbling through. So
what's your plan for that right now with that particular subject?
Yeah.
I mean, essentially you're saying, how do I talk to my son about sex, the hormonal changes he's going to experience in regard to that, and also spiritual growth as in relation to becoming a man, learning how to love God with all his heart, soul, mind, and strength.
Right.
How does that even happen? So yeah, reading the book is one of those things you're going to do.
Sure. Yeah.
To guide him in that way.
Yeah. I mean, and that is the sort of foundational in exploring the gospel, right? But as far as like exploring sex, the idea of you're going to have, you know, attractions that maybe you weren't familiar with before. I don't necessarily have an illustration or a, you know, a set out plan. I just expected to dive into it and say, hey, let's talk about this because it's, you know,
you're going
to
make an open conversation.
Yeah, that's the idea. Just be honest and open about it. That's my plan. We'll see how it goes. Yeah. With the younger boys, we actually want to start something along those lines as well, but Sarah has a book that's kind of geared toward their age, and I forget what it's called off the top of my head, so I'll have to look it up. And
does it come in a series by any chance?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with a series around it, but maybe. But yeah, it is geared towards a younger age. So we talked about it and we thought Isaac may be a little old for this. So yeah. We'll start it with the younger kids.
We have a series we've used that's three or four books.
Okay.
I don't remember the title off the top of my head. I'd have to find it. But it has age brackets. So the first one is 3 to 5. And it's 5 to 9.
Okay.
9 to 12. And then teen years.
Yeah.
And we found, especially the first three books, I found them fantastic. Just really appropriate level discussion about the subject in a very truthful and straightforward way.
Yeah.
About sex.
Okay.
About sexuality.
Yeah.
So very truthful, very straightforward, appropriate though for the age group.
Right.
So I'll have to find out what that is. I'll tell you. And then you can figure out if you want to look at it more.
Yeah. But yeah. That's cool.
Very worthwhile book.
That's awesome.
So the book, you've got some other books for the younger ones you're going to go through.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the plan. And main thing is, you know, when I was saying there's multiple tenets to discipleship, you know, is there's modeling, you know, doing things together, which I haven't really thought that through. I'd like to do more of that.
Modeling sharing what kinds of things?
Anything, you know, I mean, just modeling service in church, which we kind of do. Mm-hmm. I mean, we serve in church, you know, we serve.
Sure. You're modeling that already.
In different ways. But in thinking about ways we can intentionally model for our kids and in ways that they can participate. Mm-hmm. And it's cool that they opened up the helpers in the kids so that they can also serve in kids because they're experiencing that. So that's kind of something that was done for us in a way. But modeling, you know, ways.
I heard a great quote one time that went something like, instead of do what I say, not what I do, it was just do what I do.
Right.
And I think there's something really true about that. Absolutely. As far as how children learn how to live.
Yeah. So just modeling prayer well, modeling reading of scripture well, modeling, you know, evangelism well, just finding ways to model things, to take them along and do things that open their eyes to, oh, this is what this can look like. That's the idea. And for some of those things, I have a good picture of, you know, we have a method in place where we're walking through it. You know, I would say specifically for the evangelism piece, I have an idea of how I want to approach that, and especially if it's in line with this series we're going through in, you've come sometimes in the mornings for our Quip Hour at church. Yes. And I forget the name of it.
Starts with an S.
It does.
Saturate.
Yeah. The concept of that is, you know, doing evangelism in life, you know, as a lifestyle. And one of the things that I've been trying to do for a while is find something that I enjoy that hopefully other people enjoy, which for me is tabletop gaming. And we do that at the church last Saturday of every month, and we hope that people will show up and we start to build a relationship with people who maybe don't regularly attend church and start to find out more about who they are. And in a, you know, a very real, like learn about a person way, be able to invest in them and learn more about them. So that's
my kids. Low risk environment.
Right. Yeah. And my kids are involved in that. And that's the hope, is getting them to see that work. And I would say it hasn't so far. We haven't had as good of a response as I would like, but it's something we're trying to build, and maybe it's the wrong direction for us. Maybe we try a different direction, but I've seen that work really well before in a college environment and would love to see it work again. And would love that to be an opportunity to have my kids there and see, you can do something you enjoy with people who enjoy it, and that can be, you know, an open door for, you know, inviting them to talk about Christ and inviting them to talk about their, you know, struggles, their beliefs, and just be real, you know, instead of let's do a pamphlet, you know, which there's good in that. And that JT has a great story.
About the pamphlet.
Yeah. Yeah. About the, he called it, I'm trying to remember if he called it the quota approach, but he talked about having to meet a quota. He was going through a process where he had to meet a quota, and he was talking to a guy about the gospel just to meet a quota. And I remember him saying that this is going to go nowhere. This guy is currently on drugs and he's not listening to me. And the way that story unfolds was really cool. You'll have to ask him about it. Yeah. But just the, just going into it, you can have this mentality of this doesn't work, but that's putting God in a box. And I think the same thing with pamphlets, right? Like there's been so many people that have been led to Christ using pamphlets. Yeah. So I don't want to knock them, but I just I want to pursue something very natural. I want to show the kids, like, that's a good way to approach loving people, is doing it in a way that's natural. So
I guess that fits in the idea of, you know, when it says, go and make disciples of all the nations, some people would say that actually means as you go,
right,
make disciples of all nations. And one of your passions is gaming, board gaming.
Yeah.
And so you're going.
Yeah.
And in that process.
Yeah. And I think sometimes God is present, go out of your way, right? Mm-hmm. And I love the, you know, the reinterpretation, but the other Great Commission, you know, in Acts, where he does the stair steps of, you know, Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, to the ends of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Just this idea of stair steps of discomfort, right? Like in Jerusalem, you're with your people, you're comfortable. If you go into Judea, you start to see a mix of Samaritans and people you're less comfortable with. And then in Samaria, where you're surrounded by people you're not comfortable with, and into the unknown, where who even knows what's out there, right? And that idea of, yes, as you go, like, be invested in speaking the gospel in people's lives or showing the gospel through what you do, like you said. But also find opportunities. If there's an opportunity for you to be involved in something that's outside your comfort zone that wouldn't be as you go, be open to step into that. I think that's big.
Mm-hmm. That's good. So you want to show your kids that by doing it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the goal.
Would you say that as a father, having children has helped you to grow?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's wild. I think to see God work through kids is amazing. And there have been amazing times where my kids have spoken truth over me and I've been like, where did that come from? I mean, from a parenting perspective, just having kids humbles you, right? The challenges of being a parent and trying to raise kids in just a ever-changing environment. Because kids will change all the time. They'll bring chaos when there doesn't need to be chaos, and they'll be calm at times where you don't expect them to be. But everything in between, you find yourself sometimes at the end of your patience. And I think, like in so many stories, we learn patience by stretching our patience. And you see God using our kids to remind us how we are like kids in a lot of ways, and how we rebel against Him. And it's amazing to see those parallels, to see the shadows of what God's relationship is to us via our relationship to our kids. So I think that helps a lot. But again, like I said at the start, even just straight up kids saying through prayer, I remember Isaac saying one time, you know, dear God, help Daddy to love football less. And I remember saying, ouch. Like, that is an observation. It's astute. And let's work on that. You know, but also, you know, Isaac stepping in a moment, you know, where we're trying to give discipline and we're trying to rein in Joshua, and Isaac just stepping in and saying, hey, let's take a moment and let's pray this through. Because he could see, like, everything was getting heated. I was losing my patience. Joshua was losing his patience. And so the oldest kid steps in and says, hey, let's pray about this. Let's get peace in the situation. And there's those moments where you're like, wow, that's that's God working through my kid to remind me, you know, to turn to Him in situations like this. So it's, you know, it can happen in a lot of ways. It can happen because your kids are crazy, and it can happen because God's working through them. But He does work through them in both of those ways. So absolutely.
With that idea of learning and growing and being stretched, what would you say is the most challenging time that you've had to face with your, as a father?
That's a hard one, because I feel like every stage comes with a different challenge. Every stage has its joys and every stage has its challenges. And I would probably say the early stages, the prior to toddler, is the hardest for me. I'm not a big baby person, so I don't see a lot of benefits in having a baby. Like some people say, oh, it's a baby, it's cute, you know, you have a baby around. And for me, there's not a lot of benefits to a baby. Just knowing this is going to grow into a human who's,
yeah, sure,
who's functional at some point, you know, and you have love for your kid, you know, as a baby. But that stage is more so, you have to be more invested in a totally dependent being who can't, at some points, can't even move, mm-hmm. you know, just sits there and may not even be able to see you or recognize who you are, but just has so many needs. And I think that for me was probably the most challenging. It's just, you don't feel as much reciprocation. I mean, there is some, right? But it's, you feel less. You feel less recognition, but you have to give so much. Mm-hmm. And
a lot of self-sacrifice involved at that point.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's good. I would imagine you're not alone in that feeling of that baby stage being challenging.
Yeah.
I imagine there's other fathers out there who feel the same way.
Yeah. But like I said, every stage brings new challenges. You can always say, can't wait till we get to here. And then you get there and you realize, oh, can we go back
to the other one?
I was familiar with that stage, so let's rewind.
Do you feel like your wife would say something different for that baby stage?
I don't know. I think that she's indicated similar things in the sense that I mean, she definitely loves babies.
But it was a hard time.
Yeah, but it's absolutely a hard time. I think she would still indicate that it's harder than it is now, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if she would say that's the hardest time, but yeah, that probably pretty close, if not.
That's cool. So, if I was a brand new father, what things would you tell me that I must do?
Hmm.
Two items that I have to do as a father.
Wow.
That I should do. What do you think those two things would be?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing is, I mean, I know this may be cliche, but the biggest thing, when we read all these books, you know, a book on marriage, a book on, you know, something completely unrelated, we find that often what is talked about is spend time in prayer and reading the word.
Mm.
And again, it seems cliche, especially, you know, coming at it from a spiritual standpoint, saying, what do you do as a father? But depending on God to be involved in your situation, whether it's being a father or anything else, that's the most important thing. Mm. And it's important to dig in really at that point, because you're responsible for more than just yourself, more than just you and your spouse. You're bringing a little one into that. So making sure that, you know, God is respected, that God is prioritized, and that you are, you know, handing your children over to Him as a part of that raising process, I think is vital. Second, I think also very important is presence, right? Be involved in every stage of the way, right? Because you're going to mess up, you're going to learn, but you've got to be there, you've got to be present. I think that's huge, because a lot of things come after that. We read a lot of books that say, do this as a father, and then another book will say the exact opposite, do this as a father. And you'll learn that your method of being a father is different than mine, and someone's is going to be completely different than both of ours. They're going to stumble in different ways. They're going to learn different ways to, you know, speak to their kids, to discipline their kids in the right way. But being present and being invested in praying for their kids and being in the Word, I think, is huge.
Do you feel like there was a point at which you wanted to quit on either of those items?
I think that... if I wanted to quit, I wouldn't say I wanted to quit on either of those items, but I would say there have been a lot of times where I haven't done either of those well. Mm. Yeah, there have been times where, kind of like the talk about days going by really fast, and you realize, wow, what have I been doing? You know, you look at maybe a week's worth of what you've been doing and realize, I could have done a better job of serving my wife in this way, or, you know, helping her with the kids, or doing this particular thing, being involved, and especially, you know, praying and, you know, investing in that way, you know, being able to lead my wife spiritually through studying the Word together in that time, I think would have been massive. And there are a lot of times where I did not do that well. I'd say I'm still growing at that. And I think it's a good thing to be growing, but it's also not a good thing to stay in a place where you need to be growing, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah, we want to always be growing.
Yeah.
But you can't always look back and say, I'm still growing in the same way that I was growing 10
right.
years ago.
Right, yeah. Yeah,
and you didn't actually grow anywhere.
Right, yeah.
You just wished for growth, but didn't actually make any progress.
Yeah. That's very true.
No, that's good. Cool. I think that's all the questions I have for you. So, if you think this conversation would be helpful to other fathers, share it, please. You can ask questions in the comments. And thank you very much to Michael for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Fellow fathers and friends, so glad you could join us for this episode. To stay connected, visit our website at fatherandfriend.com. Sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media sites. Be sure to like, follow, and share with fellow dads and families in your community. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, send us a message and let us know. Until our next episode, keep showing up, loving deeply, and making an impact for the good of your family. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Father and Friend.